Alan Crane Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2022.
Today, review for the midterm exam. It will be 40 questions, multiple choice, true and false, and then there's a matching section. And there are, of course, a series of math questions, which I have already gone through and I will go through again, just to mention them. But the math questions will be loan related. You'll find a payment, a balance after a certain number of years into the loan, and you will find an effective interest rate. You will also do a problem where you will find the future value of an annuity due. And that should be the extent of the math. I'll have to check here. Well, I guess I could just put the exam up here on the overhead so you could see it. I guess I told you about that one time. I didn't realize it used to be the mute button actually would go off. And there for a while, the exam was just showing people were writing really fast. I mean, yeah, sneak up here, tap, tap. Okay, now, other broad topical areas. I will put up I will show you a stock screen, and I will ask you questions about that stock screen. Let me be very specific about it, just as part of the review to do the numbers, as we often do in this class. Quit it. Stop it. This is a bear day. Is it more, huh?
Bear.
Yeah, I mean, this is what, in other words, your professor is losing his retirement income hand over fist right now. It's rough, the market is, and that's just the way the market is. You have to know the difference between a bear day and a bull day. Don't be fooled if I put up other animal names. It's bear and bull are the ones that you talk about. And then I will ask some questions about this market here. Are you seeing trading in a primary or a secondary market? Say it? It's absolutely secondary. Make sure you know the difference between a primary market and a secondary market. And also know the difference between a capital market and a money market. If companies are trying to raise long-term funds, whether it's through selling stock or selling bonds, borrowing, they are going to be accessing capital markets, not money markets. So make sure that you know those distinctions. Capital versus money markets, primary versus secondary markets. There will be a couple of questions where I will probe your understanding of those kinds of terms. And also, the whole idea of liquidity and what liquidity has to do with it. Make sure you know my definition of liquidity. You will find incorrect definitions all through the web. And just like you found that Nixon was the stagflation on the web during the quiz, instead of the one I told you it was, Jimmy Carter. So you want to avoid the web because that's where you will get yourself burned. As a matter of fact, if any of you actually follow my website and LinkedIn, you'll see that my latest piece of advice here, I'm thinking of letting my students use their computers during the tests. Eventually, the brighter ones will figure out whether it's the internet or their professor who grades their answers. And that's on LinkedIn too, and people are not finding that particularly humorous. Good. Okay, now, over here, the bond market. Make sure you know that yields and prices are inversely related. I'm telegraphing questions to you right now. In this case, we see green, but bonds are the bond chart is a yield chart. So you have yields going up, which means the prices are going down. Now, I'm not going to hit you with anything about the commodities markets, so don't sweat that. Sometimes I might say, well, what is the trading band in which oil is active right now? That would be an answer of 82 to 89, but I'm not going to hit you with that on this exam. I could very well do it on the final, talk about some kind of market. Now, I will, on this exam, give you a screen. I did a screen capture yesterday, so it'd be fairly current information, and I'll ask you some questions. So for that, I don't know, Twitter. I'll ask you, is this a stock very safe, very low risk, somewhat low risk, about the same risk as the market, a little riskier than the market, or much riskier than the market? Now, the one that you will have a very clear answer. This one, I mean, I would call that very low risk. Some might say it's a little less risky than the market. But the one you see will have a beta that will just telegraph its risk to you. And then I'll ask you one, yeah.
So what would you consider a really safe beta then? Like,
I would say anything around 0.5 or below is very safe. I mean, you get these ones like Kellogg and these ancient companies. They're in the 0.4 to 0.3. And in fact, interestingly enough, bonds, if you look at their betas, bond betas are like anywhere from 0.15 to 0.35. They're so super safe. That's why we have that term flight to quality. Remember what flight to quality is. It's moving from riskier investments like stocks to safer investments like bonds. And a lot of that has to do with the betas. The average stock beta is higher than the average bond beta by a mile in some cases. But in this case, I will also ask you, are the PE ratio and the beta in agreement? And I look at this one, and the answer is, oh, hell, that's right, oh, hell no. I mean, this is like, and what's happening here is the price is skyrocketing on the speculation that Elon, he of the cloven hoof, Musk, is about to buy Twitter, which means he's going to enter the secondary market. If he wants control of that company, he's going to have to buy stock in the secondary market, and he's going to have to buy what is technically called a shitload of stock to do that. And of course, everyone's getting in front of it to buy stock because of the expectation he's going to enter, and so the price is going through the roof. I'm going to bet it's like the last time. I bet the last time it wasn't going to happen, so I bet against the mark of the stock, and I won last time. And I'm probably going to do it this time, too. That's just because this time he's probably going to burn my ass. But okay, now, I would also ask you, is this a profitable company? Look at the EPS. If it's positive, yes. If it's negative, no. That's all you have to do. And you have gotten like three or four questions nailed right there. The screens are, in my judgment, one of the most useful things you get out of a course like this, is knowing how to read these screens. I could ask you, okay, if you bought one round lot, that'd be 100 shares, what would you pay? And in the case of Twitter, you'd pay $5,050, yeah, $5,050. If you sold a round lot of Twitter, what would you get? You'd get $5,049. You have to just show me that you can do that. I mean, like I said, these are really easy questions. And at first, this is the kind of thing that asking you really early in a semester, you wouldn't be able to do it. But by this point, you should be very comfortable with it, and this should get you some points to build up your hopes and dreams before they get shattered by the rest of the exam. Okay, now, terminology is going to be, let me dump this, right? I'm trying to think here if there's anything else I want to say. Oh! What's Twitter's dividend policy? Yes, they do. Their dividend policy is not to pay dividends. You be careful of that. No corporation has no policy. They have a policy. And their policy is not to pay dividends. In other words, plow every penny they earn back into the corporation. That is a deliberate, distinct policy. So just make sure you know that one, too. Pardon? Right there. See? Forward dividend. NA.
So that's how you would word it, saying if, they have one
that their policy is zero dividends. Yeah. See it right there? NA. That'll be, for example, if I typed in Ford, see Ford? It has a 60 cent a share dividend. It's profitable. Look at this one. This one's interesting because here, this beta is signaling risk. But look at that price earnings ratio. In my judgment, this has got a lot of price upside potential to bring that PE ratio up to about 30. I see there as being a lot of potential for a strong rise in price. I mean, look at Ford. That's an $11.43 a share stock. I mean, that's pretty good for an auto company. You know, one that's old. Granted, Ford sometimes suck, but they've gotten a lot better in recent years.
So those are in agreement?
No, they are in disagreement. This PE ratio is normally for a high-risk stock above 30. And here, it's down there, almost down a handball on the curb. So it's saying we're very risky, but right now the price is very low, undervalued kind of thing. Well, if the beta were 1.38 and the P/E ratio were 45, if the beta is above 1, P/E ratio is above 30, they're in agreement. If the beta is below 1 and the P/E ratio is below 30, they're in agreement. It's only when the beta is above 1 and the P/E ratio is below 30, or the beta is below 1 and the P/E ratio is above 30, that you have a disagreement. Now, always, for long-term investment purposes, you look at beta to form your portfolio's risk structure. But if you're looking for shorter-term opportunities, I look at the beta compared to the PE ratio. In this case, this is a blinking spy signal to me, in my judgment. And if I looked at the 1 year, wow, though, declining bottoms, declining tops, yeah. Anyway, enough of that. Okay, getting off that subject here and going back to the exam. I'm going to walk you through what I think you need to know. This is your study guide, what you write down here. And then you work from there. Then when I'm finished talking, I'll shut my pie hole and you ask me questions. Now, I also, you got a message that I had recorded that Zoom help session. There are, you'll see the calculator, one by one, everything being punched in there for all of the math questions. So you really, if you don't want to hear the rest of it, watch that part of the Zoom lecture. That's the link I sent you, and the password to it is in your inbox. Because, I mean, that just, you know how to do that. Make sure you just know whether it's monthly, which would be a 12, and weekly, which would be a 52. That's all you need to, that's a big thing where I saw the mistake. I also saw some people forget to change the beginning to the end or the end to the beginning. But where I saw most of it was not remembering N times I percent divide by whatever the payment structure is. Okay. You need to know the difference between accounting and finance. Specifically, that we consider costs in a much different way from what finance does. We focus on opportunity costs and future expected costs and replacement costs. Again, we focus on opportunity costs, expected costs, and replacement costs. Opportunity costs, expected costs, and expected future costs, and replacement costs. In other words, I don't care what you paid for something 10 years ago. I need to know what it's going to cost when you have to replace that. Now, in accounting, everything is about sunk costs, historical costs, and mythical costs like depreciation. So you can tell when I ask a question, which of these is a finance cost or which of these is an accounting cost? You just look for which category it falls into. Now, liquidity. Make sure you know the definition of liquidity. And I will give you a multiple choice where I'll give you all of the different wrong answers you'll find on the web, and then you'll also find the one that I gave you in class. I will also ask a couple of other questions about liquidity. One that I'll ask you, and I talked about this in one lecture, you'll have to find it in your notes, liquidity and intrinsic value. Intrinsic value is what something is worth to you to use. Madam, see this dollar bill? This has extremely high liquidity. I can efficiently change it from this asset to another asset anytime I want, right? How much intrinsic value does it have? Can you use this? What do you say? I mean, to eat? You know, maybe to use for toilet paper, I don't know. Can it actually be physically used for a purpose that is inherent to it? The answer is not really. It has almost no intrinsic value. That's true of all liquid assets. The more easily you can transfer it, the less value it has. Remember the example of the moose and the apple pies, or the elk? What, were you the one who killed the elk and tried to sell it to me? Okay, I can't remember what it was. It was a few years ago, and I was hungry, and I made myself pies, but you showed up at the door with an elk.
Oh, yeah. It was me? Yeah, I guess it was me. I didn't know that.
Wow.
Sorry.
One of my best. Okay, now, so make sure you know that. Also, liquidity, as far as liquidity goes, know the relationship between liquidity and excuse me. Oh. Oh, yeah. Only that had an olive in it. Okay. Liquidity and what you expect to get from it, expected return. This dollar bill is in my pocket, right? Is it going to make baby dollar bills? I don't know, that dollar bill is a little weird acting in there. No, it's not going to do anything. It's very quickly changed to another asset, but it has almost no expected return. That's the thing is, you are highly illiquid, unless, you know, we use a big blender, but you have a high expected return over your lives. A house has an extraordinary potential for return, but you can't turn it into a cheeseburger at Red Robin. It depends. Some of those burgers are so expensive, you know. How much for? Yeah, all I do, I just stand outside of Red Robin and look in at the people and say, that's right, eat that cheeseburger, bro.
Are you fat shaming people?
Yeah, you know, it's. I figure they'll finally come out and give me a cheeseburger just to make me go away. Okay, make sure you know the difference between, know the relationship, I'm sorry, between liquidity and expected return. I will ask you this on the exam. Now, as far as liquidity goes, one more hit at it. Look at your current assets. Which one is the most liquid? Which one is the least liquid of your current assets? Again, look at your current assets on a balance sheet. Which one is the most liquid? Which one is the least liquid? Now, they're current assets, so supposedly they're all liquid assets. But they, interestingly enough, if you look down how they rank them, how they list them in the current assets, they go from the most liquid to the least liquid, usually. So think about that. Another hint I could give you is, why do we look at the acid test? Okay, now definitions, moving on with definitions, I'm going to go through here. Know the difference between market and intrinsic value of a stock. Market and intrinsic value of a stock. Another thing. Know what the difference is between a capital market and a money market. A capital market and a money market. Remember, the capital markets are that vast ocean of funds that are for long-term investments. And money markets is that vast ocean of funds that are available for short-term investments. Like, for example, if I were to buy a house on a loan, those funds would come from the capital market. It's a long-term use of the funds. When a company sells stock, it's accessing capital markets because that stock, it lives forever. A company sells stock so that it can raise money for huge projects. Money markets are for short-term loans. Like when you, sir, go to payday loan, because if you had two quarters, you'd have two to rub together, but you don't have two, you have one. And that one's a little, you know, suspicious. Looks more like a token at Chuck E. Cheese's. Okay. So, in other words, money markets are where you get short-term. Now, companies do access those markets. Remember I told you about commercial paper, 30-day loans companies take out to get, just for quick budgeting purposes. Money market mutual funds, for example. When I say, well, the investors are obviously keeping their money in cash, what they're probably doing is they're putting it in these money market mutual funds, which are also available to you as well. When you're, if you've got a good brokerage house and you sell some stock, it usually goes into your money market account. It doesn't earn hardly anything because it's got high liquidity. But it's there for you to be able to pull it back out very quickly and buy some more stock or something. Okay. The basics of business organizational structures. What kind of company could issue stock? Can any company issue stock? The answer is no, only one kind can. What kind of company has a shield from the liabilities of the company? The owners have a shield against the liabilities of the company. Yeah? No. I would say that'd be a corporation. No, so sole proprietorships and partnerships, the people involved are all at risk because the company is those people. Only in a corporation, and a little bit to an LLC, but only in a true corporation are the is the corporation its own entity. Those bills are the corporations, not the shareholders, the owners. So make sure you know that, because I will ask you that on the exam. Oh, make sure you know the difference. I think I already said this, but make sure you know the difference between a primary and a secondary market. A primary and a secondary market. The primary is where the company itself is selling stock or selling bonds. Secondary market is where we all play, buying and selling with other investors. The company has nothing to do with that. Yeah. Now, interestingly, technically a company can enter a secondary market, like if it wants to buy back its own stock, you know, to boost the price, it would do that in the secondary market, but that's, don't worry about that. Liquidity is the efficiency with which an asset can be converted to another asset. Liquidity is the efficiency with which an asset can be converted to another asset. Watch out for the words, because some definitions, instead of efficiency, they say ease. And some definitions, instead of another asset, they say cash. And both of these are incorrect. Either of them is incorrect. Know what kind of bank is involved in selling, in buying the stock of a corporation. What type of bank is involved would be if Facebook wants to sell $1 billion worth of stock to raise $1 billion. What bank does that? Buys that stock. You don't buy it. That's a primary market transaction, and those are almost always done by this kind of bank. Oh, mother's work is never done. Well, obviously, you should know the difference between a bull and a bear. Did you see what that bear did? That bear disgraced me. It hurt me. Deeply. Kind of. One quick one I did. Now, like I said, you go back through those quizzes. All of your answers are available to the quizzes. I copied and pasted, just literally copied and pasted 7 from the quizzes. So the answers would be the same. The right answer would be the same. Not necessarily your answer, but the right answer would be the same. Yeah, yes. Okay, now. Yeah, they should. I mean, I keep changing the toggle to show answers, but the 4 for this class, I checked it again yesterday or the day before that, and it was back to don't show the answers. And so I've toggled it back. If you see that the answers aren't there, send me a quick email message and tell me. Because it's just driving me crazy. VeggieNet is out to send me mad.
Wait, what
me? Huh? Okay. You really do like to push it, don't you? I'll give you a hint. I use the initials quite frequently. IB. That's not irritable bowel. Okay. I'm not saying one way or the other. I've given you too much candy. It's like Halloween. Well, it is. And I've bought so much candy, I'll have plenty left over. Okay, now, here's something that's important. I've got a question on there, and I think I did this. This is a variation on a quiz question. where you have to know the difference between the different types of debt. Short-term debt is a bill that'd be 1 year or less. Now, if it's more than 1 year, but less than maybe 10, that's called a note. And if it's long-term, like 30 years, 20 years, 15 years, that's called a bond. Now, the other part of that that you need to understand also for this one question, who is the issuer, the borrower, the seller of the debt? And who is the lender, the purchaser, the investor? I give you one of those questions where you borrow $80 from your friend and you promise to pay him back in 6 months. And I will say, which of these is the transaction technically? You issued a note to your friend. Your friend bought a bond from you. Say that? A note is from 1 year to about 10. And, or I could say, your friend invested in a bill you sold. Make sure you can put it together. First of all, the time frame. That'll tell you whether it's a bill, a note, or a bond. That will narrow your answer down. And then you determine who sold and who bought. Well, the borrower is selling a piece of paper. The lender is buying the piece of paper. The lender is investing in you. So make sure you know that, because I ask a question, one of those questions is on the exam, pretty early on. Now, as far as corporations go, the stockholders and the bondholders. Make sure you know who has the prior claim and who has the residual claim. Sometimes the stockholders are called the shareholders, but one way or the other, do they have the prior claim or do they have the residual claim? The debt holders, the bondholders, do they have the prior claim or do they have the residual claim? Make sure you know who has which. And I even throw a curveball in there and mention stakeholders. And stakeholders have no meaning to us in finance. Well, at least they shouldn't. Also, as far as corporations go, dividends. Do companies have to pay a dividend? Do they have to pay their interest payments? Which one would be paid first, interest payments or dividends? Hint, the interest payments would be paid first because the debt holders who get the interest payments, the coupon, they have prior claim. If there's anything left, the shareholders get it. Now, interest rates. Make sure you know what is in the risk-free rate. It is the real rate of return and the expected inflation premium. Those two together make the risk-free rate. And then you have the risk premium. The risk premium has the default premium, the maturity premium, and the illiquidity premium. First of all, the illiquidity premium, it would be there only if the original lender couldn't sell that debt to someone else to take over very easily. Like credit cards have a high illiquidity premium because once a bank issues a credit card, it's going to be hard for that bank to unload those on some other company. A home mortgage has virtually no illiquidity premium because of that vast secondary mortgage market I told you about. Ginnie Mae, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Student loans have a very low liquidity premium because they even have one of those secondary markets. It's called Sallie Mae. Where you would have the high liquidity premium, personal loans banks make to people, those, the bank is pretty much stuck with those. And things like that. Okay, now the maturity premium. It gets larger the longer the life of the loan. Simply because there's more time for interest rates to wiggle around, making uncertainty. So in other words, and this is a trick question. Okay, you row of geniuses. A AAA corporate bond, 30-year, and a government bond that's a 30-year government bond, which would have the higher maturity premium? They'd have the same, because they're both 30 years. Good, I'm glad you agree with it. Good one, Professor. I stay away from people who vex me, okay? Except this whole class does, so. Okay, yeah, okay, now, so in other words, a home mortgage will have more of a maturity premium in it than a car loan would. Because a car loan finishes up in what, about 5 years or something like that? So in 5 years, there's less chance for interest rates to vibrate around than there is in a 30-year instrument. So that's why maturity premium goes up the longer the loan is. Now, the default premium, it's the reward, it's little extra scratch in the interest rate for the possibility that the borrower is going to default. So in other words, if it's like a collateralized loan, like a home mortgage, very low default premium because even if the borrower defaults, the bank gets the house. And it also, most people don't know, the borrower has been paying insurance hidden in the payments every month so that even if the house doesn't have enough to pay the balance on the loan, the mortgage insurance covers the gap. So banks have virtually no loss in a default, so the default premium is low. Cars have a little bit higher default premium because even though the lender can get the car back, the car loses value as soon as you drive it off the lot. So there will be a little default premium for that. Now, if it's an uncollateralized loan, like a credit card or a personal loan, those have a high default premium because of the There's a chance that the bank's going to lose its ass on the loan. So they might bump the interest rate up even a couple hundred basis points for that possibility. Okay, make sure that you know that history story that I told you. It was the last time stagflation became a serious economic and political problem was during which of the following U.S. presidents? I give you all the presidents from the 1950s to the early 1980s. When you go to the web, they're going to tell you one president. In fact, during his administration, that word hadn't even been invented yet. But now they all say that's stagflation, and that was not. The most recent example of stagflation happened after that president. Make sure you know it this time. Oh, mother's work is never done. Okay, now, I won't ask you any numerical questions about net present value or internal rate of return. That'll be on the final, and maybe on quizzes. But you need to know what you're calculating. So for example, if you're calculating a net present value, you use a certain discount rate, let's say 6%. You'll get an answer, a number. What happens if you raise that discount rate to, let's say, 9%? what happens to that net present value? That's almost straight up what I'm going to ask you. It's pretty easy. Now, the other one is internal rate of return. Remember that the internal rate of return is the discount rate that you would use that would make the net present value zero. If you use discount rates that are lower than the internal rate of return, you get positive NPV. If you use discount rates that are below the internal rate of return, above the internal rate of return, you'll get negative NPVs. Make sure you know the relationship between net present value and internal rate of return. I will ask you this on the exam. Okay. On another topic, make sure you know what is in NOPAT and what is not in NOPAT. Again, make sure you know what's in NOPAT and what is not in NOPAT, net operating profit after taxes. So, if I said NOPAT includes cost of goods sold, that would be true. NOPAT includes interest expense. That would be false. NOPAT includes taxes. That would be true. Because we take the operating income times 1 minus the tax rate. So it does include the taxes. Now, two more in that same vein. At the end of the day, our holy grail in finance is free cash flow. Is that just another term for profit? One more thing. Know what makes free cash flow go up and what makes free cash flow go down. So in other words, if your accounts receivable go up, does that add to free cash flow or does it drain free cash flow? Again, if accounts receivable go up, does that add to free cash flow? Or does that take down free cash flow? The answer is it takes it down because that's revenue that didn't happen. On the other side, suppose your wages payable goes up. That would help free cash flow because that was money I was supposed to pay, I said I paid, that I didn't. So, in other words, current assets going up drains free cash flow. Current liabilities going up adds to free cash flow. And I'll say that again. Current assets going up drains free cash flow. Current liabilities going up helps free cash flow. Give me just a second here. I'm trying to be as thorough as I can. Obviously, I don't give you everything because I'm going to miss things. Let me go back through, sweep back through one more time. See if I missed anything big. Okay, got all that. Oh, ratios. Some of the ratios are actually related to other ones. So, let me give you one. Which is always going to be the biggest? Current ratio or acid test, the quick ratio? Which one would always be at least, let me put it this way, at least as large? Which one is bigger? Current ratio or the quick ratio, the acid test? Can anyone answer that one? Huh? Current, yeah. Because the acid test is on the numerator, instead of just all current assets, you take the current assets and subtract away the inventory. So in other words, the quick ratio would be lower because it has something subtracted in the numerator. Which would be a bigger number? Return on assets or return on equity? They both have net income in the numerator, but in the denominator, return on assets has all of the assets. Return on equity, the denominator, has only the shareholders' value. So you should know that one. I'm not saying you should, but it might help you. Another one that might be of use to you. Debt to total assets is always less than what number? Debt to total assets is always lower than what number? Remember that debt plus equity is total assets. So if I divide the debt by the total assets, instead of the debt plus equity by total assets. See, if I divide, what do you get if you divide total assets divided by total assets? One. So you have to know that debt to total assets would have to be lower, yes. Times interest earned. When would I start, what number, if it fell below what number, I would start making monkey sounds? What? Monkey sounds? No, what number, times interest earned? If I saw that fall below what number, would I start making monkey sounds? Oh, I would have gone past monkey sounds. I'd be making, you know, sounds like Thor.
I'm a beefcake.
No. Yeah.
Bad.
Do you... No, well, I suppose it's good if you're at a party and you want to be the life of the party, you know. No. You know, sometimes I see in the audio profile of these lectures, I see these weird spikes, sonic spikes or acoustic spikes, and I keep thinking, no, I don't want to go back and see what was happening then. Give me... What did you say it was? Could be Wabbit. Yes. Wabbit.
So yes, that's what I'm hearing. You should say it, because I'm now. I don't know.
This is that don't ask, don't tell, except ask and I won't tell. Okay?
No, we haven't done that a long time.
Yeah, I know. Actually, in the, you know, the way why even back in my time, don't ask because I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
Okay, now it's your turn to ask me questions. Go ahead, make my day. Ask questions, go ahead.
So if we have definitions from the book, are they going to be different from yours?
The only one that might be, there are two places where the book is actually, one place where the book is exactly wrong. And we've tried to get the publisher to go back and fix it. It's the one where they say that the... high P.E. ratios are low risk. That's patently wrong. And one of the authors, you could tell that guy had been a trader. The other author, he was like, he'd been a professor for his whole life. So he was the one who wrote that chapter, and he said that's not correct. Now, the liquidity, use my definition of liquidity. Because there are other definitions, but they all fall apart if you push too hard on looking at them to apply. And I'm trying to think if there's any place else. Oh, there's one that's not in the book at all, that ratio, the burn ratio. Remember I talked about that one, cash over your current liabilities. And I told the story of GameStop. That one's not even in the book. And also, there were some ratios in the book that I didn't talk about. Like, remember they showed you that DuPont ratio? I didn't bring that ratio up, and I certainly wouldn't ask you about it on a test. Go ahead. Ask me other questions. Yeah.
Do we need to know what the definition of capital structure is?
No.
No.
See? I mean, if you ask me a point-blank question, I'll tell you yes or no. So go ahead. Work on 50 questions, 40 questions. Go. Math questions? No. Okay, I asked you all the ones about loans, right? And the payment, the balance, and the effective rate. And then there was one about future value of, you know, you put money into an account. And remember, if the question starts with starting today, you know it's the future value question. And so you go down there and toggle to begin right away. But other than that, there was math that I did in this part of the course, but I mean, in this first half of the course. But since I'm going to go back through all of it again, I would really prefer that I had you better prepped for that, for the final. Go.
Bond indenture agreement. Do we need to know the definition of that?
No.
About damages.
Yes. What do you call a loan that is back collateralized? Mortgage loan. What do you call a loan that is not collateralized? Huh? Yeah, my kind of loan. Because I don't got nothing to collateralize except my cats, and my cats are not available, you know. But what do you call it if it's not collateralized? What did you call that? Yeah, debenture, not debenture. That sounds like dentures. Not that dentures are bad. I actually had dentures for a while. I put them in, and the neighborhood girls were there one day, and I sneezed, and they fired out on the ground. Boy, was that popular. So I had those permanent things put in.
So we need to know what debentures and
mortgage bonds. Debentures and mortgage bonds. Usually we refer to those in the context of debt bonds and all of that. Ask me something else. Yeah.
Do we need to know, like, filler kill stops?
No, I'm not going to ask that on this exam because I've just started to show you that. Yeah.
So you said we can print off the.
Okay, let me do that. Let me do that whole thing again. First of all, you've got a 4x6 note card, both sides. You also can print off that financial analysis formula sheet.
Where is that?
It's in your resources tab in VeggieNet. Or ReggieNet, gee. Yeah.
So you said there's going to be, like, a matching part. Is matching going to be, like, the definition?
It will, or maybe not perfect, pure definition, but enough words that you will be able to see it right away. That is intended for you to get all of them right. Lord knows I have people who do defy me on that, so I ignore that kind of stuff. Stop it. But the matching part, it's really basic stuff, you know, my definitions, like debentures or liquidity or bond or flight to quality, things like that. It's just really basic stuff. Match the letter to the thing. Yeah.
Chapter 7,
only some of the definitional stuff about bonds, like mortgage bonds versus debentures, or some of the things, the basic, what is the term of a loan, what is the term of a bond, that's how much time is left on it, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Is there private versus public?
No. I don't use the term private anywhere. You have to obviously know that a public company is one that has stock outstanding. But other than that, that's as far as that would go. You know, there are private corporations. Sometimes you heard me call them close corporations. Like, I have a corporation, but it is a close private corporation, but I don't bring that up on the exam. If I say corporation, you can kind of assume that it's a public corporation. Good question, though. I should have thought of a question like that. Go. Well, let me think. I did a loan question, found the payment, found the balance, found the effective rate, and I did a future value question of an annuity. Yeah. Oh, other than that, let me do just, there was sort of a semi-math question. The one about, give me a second here. Let me find Yeehaw Finance real quick. Let's do Target. Target. Okay. I mean, you could call it, okay, how much will you pay for a round lot, 100 shares of Target? You would pay $15,336. That's 100 times the ask. That's a math question, but that's about, or how much would you get if you sold a round lot? That would be $15,333. So, technically that's math, so yeah, you got me there. Okay. You got anything else?
Are you gonna ask about volume and average volume?
No. Nothing about volume.
Anything about market cap?
No. Okay, yeah. Convertible bonds and all that? No. Okay, that's all I have for you. I thank you.